a little bit more experience.
What up, what up, what up? Like we always do at this time. What is up, people? It is your boy, your host for the True Colors Podcast, Jamil Jude, Artistic Director at Kenny Leon's True Colors Theater Company. And I am delighted to be here with you all for episode 16. We got to do it on like multiple hands now. We'll flip it around, make sure that everybody's in there. Man, it's been a pleasure to be with you guys the last 16 weeks as we are navigating this craziness together. I always get this PSA, but I'm going to start it with this PSA. Stay your ass at home unless you have to go out and you're an essential worker and you're one of the people who are helping us get through this. Please stay your behind at home. Help us get back to doing what we want to do. Also, another PSA, man, it's been a hotly debated topic today, and I want to get the opportunity just to address it at the beginning of this podcast before we introduce our guest, Brittany Ange, today. I am firmly a milk before cereal person. Come at me, bro. Milk before cereal. It'll change your life, all right? It'll change your life. And the last thing I want to do, I want to shout out my shirt, the New Griots Festival. Today makes 3 years since we kicked off the second anniversary New Griots Festival. So I was feeling really nostalgic. Shout out to all my artists in Minnesota, all the New Griots that have come before us. But now, the reason why you all are here is for my guest, the one and only Ms. Brittany Ange. We're going to talk to her today about her career, navigating,
and how she's found herself now one of the hottest new names in the world of TV on her show, Boomerang. Hey, Brittany, what's going on?
You know, life.
Yes, exactly, right. And if, when people ask me that, I say, hey, I'm managing, right? Like, I am managing through it all, yeah. And here we are. But I'm happy to be here with you. Thank you for saying yes to joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me.
Always, always. Anytime we get a chance to talk to you is great. Let's just start at the beginning. Tell us where you're from and how you found yourself a student in Atlanta.
Well, I'm from the DMV. I'm from Maryland, Laurel, Maryland specifically.
All right, Laurel.
And I went to Duke Ellington School of the Arts in D.C., and that was like kind of my first formal art training, and I studied voice there. And I just had this whole idea in my mind that my trajectory was going to be like being Whitney Houston. That was the end goal, like just be Whitney and everything will be all right. And then I went to Spelman College in Atlanta, and I got my degree in music there. And when I graduated, I stayed in Atlanta because Laurel, Maryland is where dreams go to die. So, actually, let me turn my air off so it's not making noise. That's where dreams go to die. And so I stayed in Atlanta. And from staying, I started trying to audition for, like, music. I started trying to audition at musical theaters, you know, just trying to get some exposure, work as an artist. And I was bombing the audition. Like, I had the music part down of, you know, trying to be Whitney. I had the music part down. The acting part, not so much. And so I was like, what am I going to do to combat this problem? And so I started taking classes. And it all kind of spiraled from there. I started doing community theater after that, and then eventually professional theater, and then film and TV.
That, man. So, you know, and we're thankful for that. But, like, I think people sometimes, you know, we see Broadway, and of course, we just saw the folks on Hamilton, but, like, that shit is hard. Like, you gotta sing, you gotta act, you gotta put it all together. Just talk a little bit for the people about, like, what is that process for it? You know, and want to give a quick shout out. Thanks for putting something in the collection plate. Talk a little bit about that process.
Yeah. So I know. I think it's true for a lot of aspiring artists. They, you know, you see people doing something that you love on TV or on stage, and you're like, oh, I think I can do that. And maybe you can. Maybe you do have a sort of natural knack or an inkling towards that field. But the idea that you can just watch someone do something on stage or on TV and then wake up the next morning and go is completely false. And I think some people adopt that energy because the work of an actor and a performer looks like so much fun. Mm. It is fun, but it's a lot of work. And yes, it takes training, and it takes, you know, the same way doctors have to be in school for, nobody disrespects the field of medicine, you know, the way they sometimes disrespect the arts. It's like that person was in school for maybe 10 years, I don't know how long it is, 10 years, and they learned about the body and how to cut into folks and all of that. Well, it's the same thing for us. We have muscles and skill sets to build as well. And you can't just wake up one morning and decide that this is what I'm going to do and just hop on somebody's stage. You'll be looking crazy. Take it from me. Because I knew that I could sing. I had trained in music and I thought that that was going to be enough. And it wasn't, you know?
Yeah, man, I think that, you know, and I had to learn that too, just as a new artist, you feel like all your intelligence and all of your know-how and just like, you know, I got grit. And then you wind up looking crazy, you know, for some actors is on the stage. For me, it's like trying to talk to an actor. I remember the first time, you know, I was lucky enough to be in a rehearsal room with the queen herself, Miss Rashad. And I remember trying to give her a thought, like a direction. And she just looked at me like I was crazy because like, I didn't actually know how to say it. I was like, I mean, I think you could do this thing. And, you know, you got to learn it, right? Like it's so for all artists out there who are, you know, trying to figure it out, take the time to learn the craft. You know, yes, you went to school, but hey, let's also take classes post-school and things like that. Brittany, that type of learning on the job, but also really investing in your training, how do you think that helped you pave the path to where you find yourself now?
Mm-hmm. I think it was everything for me. Like I said, so undergrad was music. And when I came out and started studying acting, my first step after class, taking acting classes, was doing community theater. And that for me was literally like on the job training. I credit community theater and theater as a whole, but really community theater as like my grad school experience. Because in community theater, you have to do everything. Mm-hmm. You can't, you're not just up there. You don't get to just be the performer. You have to help with set design sometimes. You got to help with lights. You got to help with sound. You know, there's so many elements that come together, especially for Black folks creating theater and not having as many resources all the time. We all come together to make sure the story gets told with all the resources that we have. So it taught me a lot and it gave me a lot of respect for the craft of storytelling and all the people that it takes to put it together.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. We want to give a shout out to, you know, theater in all its forms, especially that on the job training that we find ourselves having to go through so often. Brittany, when you are in the Atlanta theater community, you are competing with a lot of really great names here in town. How did you start to find your own particular voice? Like, here's what a Brittany Inge production could look like. And how do you help casting directors and directors see that and mm-hmm. want to buy onto that?
That's a really great question. I think for me, it's, you know, all actors, we steal from each other at times. You know, we take things from someone's toolbox, something you saw that you really enjoyed. But even if as an actor, you're stealing something from someone else, it never wears on your instrument the same way that it looks on theirs. It never looks exactly the same, and that's the beauty of it. And I think for me, I studied a lot of people. I studied a lot of folks that are like big names, like in the industry and the, like household names, but I also studied a lot of local actors who I was fans of. I went to theater and, you know, I took in a lot of theater as I was trying to work in theater. And from studying people, I started to pick up what I liked, what I didn't like, what I saw that was great, what I saw that wasn't so great. And began to just apply and try to apply like what I could bring to those characters had I been able to. So just like kind of wrapping my mind around that. And I think I eventually just got to the place of like what I enjoy the most is grounded, like really grounded barefoot storytelling. And when I figured out that that was what I enjoyed watching, it became my mission to become that type of artist and become that type of actor. And so whenever I walk into a room, I just made it my mission to show casting and to show directors that like, if you come to Brittany Inge, if you welcome Brittany Inge to the room, you're going to get the truth. Like grounded, I'm gonna find a way to make this character as grounded and as real and as human as I can possibly make her. And so I had help, obviously, Tanya Jackson, shout out to Tanya Jackson. She was one of my coaches. And I let her know that that was a goal of mine. And she was the perfect person to talk to about that because she comes from the gut. Okay. So she was the perfect person to express that sentiment to. She was like, oh, you want to tell the truth? Cool, let's get it. Like, I can help you with that. And so it just kind of grew from there.
That's good stuff. Yo, my guest today is Brittany Inge here on the True Colors Podcast. We're really excited to have her. Thanks always to anybody who is donating. We really appreciate your support of True Colors. Brittany, I've seen firsthand that grounded truth telling that you do as a performer, you know, the work that we were able to put together with the First Noel. But talk to me about, you know, there are still some differences on how you take that work in theater, where, you know, our actions have to be a little bit more broad. We got to play to the back of the house, and oftentimes we're playing to 1,000-seat houses, 300-seat houses. But then when you translate it to the small screen, how can you still bring your full true self? How did you have to modulate your performance in order to fit on the small screen?
Yeah, love that question. I actually just spoke about this semi recently. There's a Denzel Washington quote that I love. This, you know, there's no such thing as film acting or theater acting. It's just truth. Like, just tell the truth. And that's what it is. And I agree with that. And at the same time, I personally do feel that I have to tweak a little bit depending on the medium. What helps it stay grounded for me is always intention. Like, if my intention can be the same, whether I'm on stage or on the television screen, and the only difference might be that I'm using more of my body or more of my eyes. Mm. And that's getting like really technical, but
no, give us, this is what people are here for. We are here to learn from you. This is your master class. You better teach it.
And for me, it's literally that, like, the intention is the same, the subtext is the same, the energy, the sense of urgency or lack of urgency, depending on the scene, is the same for me. All of the thoughts are the same, the thoughts of the character, all of it's the same. But what might be different is how much of those feelings or thoughts am I internalizing and keeping right here versus how much can I let it out and breathe, because now I'm on stage, so it can come out of other parts of my instrument. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's it. So it helps simplify it, because I'm able to still have my same process throughout most of the journey, whether it's television, film, or theater.
Brittany, I imagine when you started in the TV world, there you had day player roles. You were coming in with a couple of, you know, maybe a line, maybe just an appearance. Yep. To now, here you are, you Crystal, right? Like, and people know you and they see you out in the world. But let's just talk about the on-set experience. Can you just talk about, you know, how have you seen, what have you learned being on set now as often as you did? From the moment that you started to where you find yourself now?
One of the biggest things I've learned is that theater actors reign supreme. And what I mean by that, like, theater actors are really appreciated on television and film sets. Mm. More than I think anyone would ever imagine. And more than sometimes even the directors sometimes may not even know what they're seeing, but they just know, like, they like it. You know, they lean in and like, wait, what is this? And so one of my first experiences on a set was on Survivor's Remorse. I played like a fan of somebody, and it was a trio, it was three girls. And I just remember that experience because I wasn't quite as polished with the TV technique. So some of my instincts were bigger. But it worked for, number one, it worked for that character, so thank goodness for me. But I just remember distinctly, like, standing out and the director being like, yeah, like, whatever you're doing, like, we need more of that from everyone. Because the character called for it, but also it just showed me that, like, oh, the training that I got in theater can carry over. And that's going back to your previous question. It really can carry over. Sometimes it is about dialing it back. But, yeah, I think the biggest lesson for me has been, like, your training can take you into any medium. And on-set experience is vital to have, but it's not, for me, the difference between television and theater is that you have far less lines to learn per day, you know, or at one time. And that's really it. It doesn't feel like this huge difference in my mind or in my process. So I don't know. I hope I answered that question, because it doesn't super.
That's great, man. You know, so all those people who are out there listening to this podcast, who, you know, are maybe starting in the theater, but who have desires to be a Viola Davis, a Sam Jackson, a Denzel, or whomever, who had their starts in theater, David Alan Greer, and then they saw themselves just kind of matriculate through it, a Brittany Inge, you know, we are letting people know that, you know, they can, those skills that they're learning, they're not, they aren't, you don't need to discard them. They actually just help you continue to train your instrument.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm telling you, will reign supreme. You will stand out on a television set, on a film set, and film especially, which I'm really passionate about. I haven't had as much experience in film as TV, but film is like the filmed medium that's closest to theater to me. It's taking time with the character. There's a beginning, middle, and end. So there's really no difference in that, I think. TV's a little better paced, but.
But y'all, we're talking to Brittany Inge today on the True Colors podcast. Brittany, I want to talk a little bit just about like what are the dreams, man? So you're a girl growing up in Laurel, Maryland. Shout out to PG County, and then you find yourself, you know, where you are. But like, what you dreamed of being Whitney, and now you're seeing yourself walking into some of those opportunities. What are the next dreams? Like, tell us where does Brittany want to go?
So I have so many dreams, so many goals. I love to write. I love to direct. I need a little bit more experience in both, but I have done both. And that's something I'm really passionate about doing and getting to. I don't want to say too much later in my career, but relatively soon. I'm still growing the acting part of it. And one of my biggest acting goals is to play like a real person. I want to play someone who has actually walked the face, whether they're still living or deceased. So I have big goals when it comes to that. Like Ida B. Wells, I am obsessed with her. I really want to play her. And I actually played her in a short film. And really, that kind of piqued my obsession. And now I'm like reading her autobiography and I'm like, there needs to be a story done on her. She was brilliant. So stuff like that. And I've heard Oprah that I should play Oprah. I really want to play also Sarah Bartman, who was the Hottentot. And it's just, I want to play real people. So that is a big goal of mine. What else? I just want to, honestly, like, when you guys did the She Griot series, that really touched me because I was like, yes, that for me, that's what it comes down to. Like, I'm just a storyteller to my core, and my ultimate goal is longevity. And so I don't care if I'm on a stage, on a television screen, on a film screen. I just want to continue doing the work of being a storyteller, being a vessel, and telling Black people's stories. Because I'm Black, I can't really tell anybody else's story. So, yeah.
Well, that's good stuff, man. You know, and you are setting me up so well for this transition. When you talk about Ida B. Wells, you're talking about someone who, you know, lived activism through their body and just in every being, every fiber of Ida B. Wells's being, talking about the lynchings that were continually happening when she was alive and those that are still happening today, right? She set a path for so many of us who are using our platforms, her in her writings and her speeches, to speak about what was happening. Can you talk about just what is that balance of being an actor and doing the craft to also wanting to be a person in the world and push change?
Well, I think that, before I'm an actor, before I'm anything else, I'm a citizen of the world, not even of the United States. Like, I am a human being. I belong and exist in this world. And so I have a right and a responsibility, I believe, to speak up about the things that are important to me, to speak up about injustices that are happening across the globe. And I would feel that sense of responsibility whether I had a more public platform or not. And so, yeah, I don't even look at it as like, oh, I'm an actor. I have so many people watching my every move. Let me make sure I speak up about this. I would be doing it anyway because I feel like it's just a like social responsibility as a human being. And I think that there is the part of it that does apply to like the responsibility of people looking at you. All that means for me is that it's an opportunity to reach more people and hopefully educate more people. And that for me, that is it. Like it's just an opportunity, but the responsibility would be the same.
Or do you ever get nervous about a stance that you may take, a comment that you want to make? Do you ever get nervous, especially as someone whose star is rising, that maybe if I speak up too loud, if I say the wrong thing, that it may be taken the wrong way?
I have had those thoughts before. And I think the fact that I've even had to have those thoughts is part of the problem, right? Because it's like, oh, should I say this? Should I not say this? Because the gatekeepers still look a certain way. That is part of the problem. So I've been doing a better job, especially in this season, of speaking up no matter what. Because if I say something, first of all, I'm not a disrespectful, derogatory person. That's just not where I come from. Everything that I come from is rooted in truth, is rooted in love for Black people. I have no shame about that. And love for all people, but I love being Black, and I'm going to proudly, stake my claim to Blackness and my pride in it. So I've become more intentional about saying exactly what it is that I want to say without second guessing myself, because I feel like any opportunity that would be taken away from me because of speaking my truth and standing up for my people, then did I ever want it in the first place? You know what I mean? And so that takes a certain amount of self-work and courage. I don't know if you've seen, like, there's been this thing going around about Michaela Cole. Vulture did a brilliant write-up on her, but she created
Oh,
her own show.
yes.
Turned down, shopping it around. She turned down $1 million from Netflix because they weren't willing
Yeah, I
to give
saw that.
ownership of her show. And that is the type of stuff that I'm talking. Like, there was no reason for her to make any other decision. Netflix wasn't for her, and now it's on HBO. It's doing very well. It's a brilliant show.
It's getting numbers.
Eyes are still on it. Like, she made the decision that she was supposed to make, and it didn't affect her negatively at all, ultimately. And so I just think we have to, as artists, we have to feel empowered to say no. We have to feel empowered to speak our minds. We have to feel empowered to speak up. Respectfully, yes, always. With kindness, with grace, always. But feel empowered to speak up.
Man, I almost blamed the chat. We were like, fire emoji, fire emoji, fire emoji. And I forget that I'm supposed to be hosting this thing because I thought, Brittany, you're absolutely right, right? Like, I think it's about, like, living in our truth. But you talked about it from earlier in the beginning of this podcast that you believe in truth, you ground yourself in truth as a performer, and it would feel maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but it would feel fake to not live that same way for
Absolutely.
what you bring on stage.
Absolutely. That's how it
Well, that's good stuff, y'all. Today, my guest is Brittany Inge here on the True Colors podcast. Thank you, Brian Jordan Jr., for hooking me up with the flame emojis. Guys, we do this every week, and we're really thankful for everyone, for all of you guys, for rocking with us here on the podcast. Brittany, make sure I say this in a way that I don't have any tension in my house. But Brittany, you walk through life in a different body than most of the people that we see on TV, right?
Hilarious.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about what does it look like for you having to navigate the world in differently than, most of the people that we have come to see historically on TV?
It's a daily journey and challenge sometimes because there has been so much, like, as a nation, right, we're in a season of unlearning and relearning. So there is so much for me that I've worked on for years now, work to unlearn and relearn about myself, about my body, about what someone who's on TV looks like, about what someone who's desirable on TV looks like. I've never had an issue feeling desirable in real life, but when you only see a certain type of woman that is like the woman on television, it can have an effect on you, especially if you think you want to go into being an artist, an actor. So it's a daily walk and a daily journey. I think, and Tanya Jackson helped me with this a lot. I always make it so that you can't deny me. Like, I just want my work and the craft to speak for itself. So that if I walk into a room, the only way you're saying no is because you have to look at yourself and say, she's too dark or her hips are too wide. And then you have to ask yourself why you feel that way. It's never going to be, I don't want anyone to ever have the excuse and say, oh, she just wasn't good enough. No, if you're telling me no, you have to talk to yourself about why. And there's also the scenario that this person's just not right for this role. And that is okay, not negating that. But I just want to be, I make it my goal to be undeniable so that I can feel better about myself and so that I can keep the focus on the work, because that's what's important at the end of the day. My love for my body is a continuous journey and work in progress. And the gift of being on television now and being someone who's not typically seen on TV is that it made me like pull up, because there are so many people who are seeing themselves in me, seeing themselves in Crystal, and get so excited when they get to see that person on TV or see her have a love scene, or, you know, when they see me on the street, like, girl, you look like me. Like, they get so excited. And that has made me pull up and have to love and pour into myself even more, because I'm like, I can't represent for y'all if I'm secretly at home picking myself apart, saying, what the hell is this? What the hell is that? So I've had to really do a lot of mental and hard work to just accept who I am. And like I said, the unlearning, because so much of how we as Black people, and specifically Black women, I want to speak to Black women in this moment, so much of how we feel about our bodies as Black women and the negative feelings that we have towards ourselves and our bodies and our features is rooted in white supremacy. And so I'm not interested in putting whiteness on a pedestal in my life, in my mind, in my spirit. So anytime I'm starting to have those feelings, I have to remind myself, Brittany, the only reason you've ever felt a way about these hips is because, you know, white women haven't naturally been built like this. Little do you know, the history of all those corsets and stuff that they used to wear was them trying to emulate the African people that they had brought over to this country. They were trying to emulate the shapes that they found on those women on another continent. And now, even today, we have our own version of it, which are folks getting surgically enhanced. And it's the same thing. We're made to feel bad about our full lips and our noses and our hips. And y'all are going to get it inserted into your bodies. So I constantly am having to just check myself, unlearn, relearn, and appreciate what I have.
You know, and thank you for just how candid you're being right now, because, you know, the things you say, right, the examples that you are setting, right, you now represent, you know, whether that's, you know, a burden that was placed on you or an opportunity that you're walking into, but you represent people, and you give people a platform and a voice, and we're really, really thankful for you. I see people are leaving some questions here in the Q&A, so I'll ask them. But I also, you know, am asking for if people have any questions, feel free to drop them in the comment section. Before I go to their questions, I do have just one more. You talk a little bit just about some of the accidental discoveries that you have found on your journey. Maybe speak about, you know, is there something else that you found or that you stumbled into? It's like, man, like, I can now walk in myself, or just I have a better understanding of self, or maybe even the world that you found over the last several years, because of your exposure and because of the representative space that you find yourself in.
Gotcha. I think so. The body is one part of it, but I have made a conscious effort and choice to also wear like natural hair or natural texture hair. Even if it is a weave or a wig, it's going to be, you know, curly. It's going to look like the hair that grows out of my head. So that's been another conscious decision of mine. I could have taken it in any direction. And I know, like, when I first started out, I would straighten my hair like for headshots and things like that. I've just made the decision to not do that. So that's another, again, intentional choice of mine. I am positioning myself to be this person, not only in the industry, but in the world. This is who I am, and this is what I want to represent. Not hiding from the sun anymore. You know, just things like that, like really all the unlearning and just being okay with exactly what I am and who I am and what I bring. I hope that's answering your question.
Yes.
Yeah, I've just started to become even more intentional everything I do is going to be rooted in Blackness, and I'm unapologetic about that. Even with my team, like folks who represent me, my agents right now, my main agent is a woman. She's brilliant. She's like young-ish. She's in her 30s.
Which is young. Being in your 30s is young.
Sorry. She's definitely young. I said young-ish. I shouldn't have said that. She's her agent. But she's in her 30s, and she's brilliant, and she's a woman. She is white. And so obviously we can connect on womanhood. But what I appreciate about her is that she doesn't pretend to understand everything else about me as a Black woman. And we have very candid conversations, and I'm very clear with her about who I am and what I bring. And hey, oh, you sent me this audition? Great. My hair is in braids right now, and that's what they're gonna get. I'm not asking you, is it okay that my hair is in braids? A couple years ago, that might've been the question though. Like, oh, I have braids, is that gonna be okay? Mm-mm. My hair is in braids right now. They're gonna get this high bun, and that, you know, and she's like, oh, you look gorgeous. Like, she understands that this is what it is. And I just appreciate those types of transparent conversations and relationships as well that I don't think I've always been comfortable having with folks who aren't Black. So. Yeah.
No, this is great. This is great. Brittany, we're talking about conversations. We're talking about finding ourselves, being in spaces where people are looking to us either as just proof that they can too do something, or also asking us to say, hey, like, can you help lead this thing forward, lead this charge forward? I know there's been a lot of conversations just here in the community that we share, the Atlanta theater community, just about what do we want the future to look like. I asked several of my guests last week who were part of Create and Idea to close their eyes and radically reinvent the Atlanta theater scene, and then, you know, tell me what they first see. I'm going to ask you the same, give you the same opportunity, if you don't mind, just to close your eyes and dream with me and think about what does a radically reinvented Atlanta theater community look like?
Ooh, I really have to close my eyes on that one because, because again, there's just so much unlearning and regrouping that needs to be done. I think what it looks like ideally for me is the Atlanta theater community looking more like the Atlanta community at large. It's a very colorful community. It's obviously very Black, but also there are a lot of cultures inside of the Atlanta community at large. And I would love for the theater community to represent that. And I don't just mean on stage, I mean ownership. And I mean like the way the stories are centered. I would like more stories centered on Blackness and more stories centered on Latinx folks. And instead of just having to insert those people into stories that already exist that were originally created for white people. You know, I would love for literally the landscape of the theater community to represent the world. So, you know, we have True Colors Theater. True Colors Theater should not be the only Black theater in Atlanta. You know what I mean? The only premiere.
Sure.
Black theater in Atlanta, because I know that it's not, and I kudos to all the Black theaters that are doing their part and trying to build, but that's the other thing. There's a lack of resources for our folks. And that even applies to you guys, and you guys are a premier theater company. And it's like, that is a discrepancy that needs to definitely be flipped around and turned on its head, because it's unacceptable, and it's doing a disservice to the community and the community of artists and the community that we serve. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I just think that, yeah, my dream would be for ownership and equity and the storytelling to be centered around the narratives of the folks that actually exist in the Atlanta community at large.
Yeah, I think one thing we've been going back and forth about over the last several months here in Atlanta is that New York Times article that said that, you know, Black people make up 54% of the population here in the city, and, you know, but we only make up 12% of the plays, plays written by people, you know, Black people. And those numbers are even more appalling for Latinx and for Indigenous and Asian American artists here in our community. So you're absolutely right that we need more investment, not just financial investment. So shout out to everybody who donates, and does the great stuff for True Colors, but also, that just the storytelling investment to invest in the stories that we're giving enrich us through the power of storytelling, because that's what we say we believe in, for those of us who say that we believe in this as an art form. Before I let you go, I want to take you out on two different questions. Our next season, which starts on the 1st of August, is about joy and pain. And it's about celebrating joy while navigating pain. There was an episode where I started singing the song, and I've been told that I shouldn't do that anymore. I won't do that, especially with a talented vocalist like you on here. But can you just talk a little bit about, like, what are the ways in which you are celebrating joy? Through this, we're in a painful, try not to curse, we're in a painful moment, right here. So what are things that you're doing to find joy?
Well, I try to really take the idea of self-care, which has become a buzzword. I try to take the idea of it seriously and really do something for myself every day and recognize also that self-care doesn't always look like fun. Like sometimes self-care is working out. That's usually what my self-care is for the day. And I don't always enjoy working out, but it is a form of self-care that benefits me in multiple ways. Number one, even though it's not fun, I feel great afterwards. Like I feel joyful afterwards. It's keeping me healthy, literally, because we got two pandemics going on. Okay, so it's keeping my immune system boosted. And it's keeping, again, my journey with my love for my body and body positivity, it's also working that. So that is a big self-care ritual for me that just keeps my mind right, my spirit up. And I also think that I have been really intentional about laughing every day, no matter what is happening. Because that's the thing, we have to remember, like, as much as there's a revolution that's taking place and that needs to happen, and we have so much work to do, we also need to be fueled up for that fight. And that includes keeping our spirits up to a certain level. Like, stay informed, but also you need to be able to experience joy because you're still here. And the idea of us just drudging along is what some people want. And so the act of Black joy is revolutionary. We have so much that we could be downtrodden about. So every time you turn your lips up into, or you fix your face to cackle, that is revolution. Because there for so many reasons, we should not be laughing, we should not be smiling, we should not be dancing, feeling as free as we often do inside of our bodies and our communal spaces. So I'm just very intentional about keeping my community around me and laughing a lot.
Yeah, we both share a friend and colleague, and Brian Jordan Jr., and he wrote that song, Black Boy Joy, a year ago, and I think about that often, and just how revolutionary. Shout out to Ashanti, who's saying revolutionary joy here in the comment section. That's really great. So the last question, you mentioned it earlier, this season, our 17th anniversary season, we've been celebrating Black women storytellers here at True Colors, our She Griots. We've been giving them a lot of love. We've been loving on them. Here's an opportunity. Please shout out the She Griots in your life. Who are the Black women and the Black women storytellers who have meant a lot to you in your journey?
Oh man, so many. Actually, the first She Griot that I have to shout out is my mother. She's not an actor or artist by
Be
trade.
Diva Mom.
Exactly. How embarrassing, Mom. Sorry. She's not an artist by trade, but she has the heart of an artist. She has the expression of an artist, and she's very. My dad is a singer, and people think I get this arts thing from him. I really get it from her. She's so lively and expressive. And so she is the first person that I ever heard tell stories. She's the first person whose stories I ever laughed at, whose storytelling style I wanted to emulate. So she is my main She Griot inspiration. In addition to that, Tanya M. Jackson, definitely a She Griot in my life. Brilliant. Cassie Davis, have to shout her out. She's been a huge influence in my life. Margo Maurer,
Margot.
so many people. Tinashe Kijese Bolden. I don't want to forget anyone. You put me on the spot, Jamil.
No, we just, you just only shouting out a couple, shout out a couple.
People have just, influenced me and impacted me, and getting to work with them has just elevated my instrument. Mia Kristen Smith, so many folks, so many.
Shout out Lena. I don't know if you heard me. I said shout out Lena. Want to give a shout out to Lena.
Yes, absolutely. Who donated earlier? Shout out to Lena.
Thank you, thank you.
Away to Dime Davis. Sorry, yeah, because I was thinking in the theater realm. Especially those two Black women who, number one, gave me a shot, gave me an opportunity to represent for Black women and the Black women that they know and wanted to see on television. So those two she griots for sure. Tiffany Johnson, who's enough, she's a director that we've worked with on Boomerang. Brilliant she griot. So yeah.
That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Well, Brittany, is there anything else that you want to leave the people with? Something, a final nugget, a final flame that you want to throw out here before we let you go?
Well, I always say too, I always get a lot of questions about being an actor, and especially from young Black women. How do I get started, or how do I do this or that? And I always say these same things. Number one, you have to be willing to invest in yourself. Can't expect anyone else to invest in you if you're not willing to invest in yourself. So that is the biggest one for me. And I get it, not everybody has. Invest isn't just money, but speaking about money, not everyone has a lot to work with. But you have to be willing to save, be willing to make the sacrifices, figure it out, plan, and execute. So that's a big one for me. And my other big thing is your knowing the business of the entertainment industry is very important. And knowing the business will get you in the room, but knowing the craft will keep you there. So I always tell people that it's really important that you work and hone both those muscles. A lot of times in the collegiate world, when you're learning about acting, you're only being taught technique. Colleges don't always do a great job, and this goes for music programs too. I know, because that's I went through a music program. They don't always do a great job of teaching young people who want to become artists, teaching them about the business of the industry. And so it's important that you do some of that work and research on your own. We have the world at our fingertips. And as much craft as you know, that's as much business as you need to know as well, because you really can't have one without the other, not to really progress the way that you want to. So knowing the business will get you in the room, knowing the craft will keep you there.
And I told you, I knew that there was one more gem that you had in there, and we had to get that out there for the people before we let you go. Guys, thank you. Today, my guest has been Brittany Eng. You guys have seen her on stage, and holler if you hear me. You've seen her on stage here for the First Noel and around many shows here in the Atlanta area, but you definitely are seeing her on TV in BET's Boomerang. She's playing an amazing role in Crystal, and she's finding bays out in Paris and stuff like
Yeah.
that. She's doing her thing, y'all. I'm so happy to be able to call you a friend, Brittany. Thank you for spending a little time with us here on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. This was so great. Loved your questions. Go ahead, Black Bear.
All right, see you later.
All right, bye.
Guys, thank you so very much, man. It was a lot of fun chatting with Brittany. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I do. Sometimes, I get a little carried away with the interviews because I often feel like, I'm just in my living room chatting with my good friends. But we want to make sure that we're trying to make sure that we are keeping engaged. We are keeping things popping, and you guys have good content to check in with here as we are in the middle of quarantine. Again, shout out to the New Griots Festival. Shout out to Josh Wilder, my co-founder of the festival. Shout out to all the New Griots that have come through the program. Y'all, again, before I leave, I just want an opportunity to talk about something that is so vitally important right here in this moment. Pour your milk first and then add your cereal. I'm telling you, it'll change your life. I was definitely a cereal first and milk second, but now I'm a convert. I've changed my opinion. You got to put the milk in the bowl first and then add your cereal. Thank me later. All right. Y'all, again, thanks for listening to episode 16. We do this every Thursday. Come back, check us out next Thursday. I will have as a guest Miss Nicole Brewer. She is working in anti-racist theater. She and I are going to be delivering a speech in front of AFTHA. And we're really excited just to kind of talk about how do you build an anti-racist theater, especially in these moments when we're talking about radically reinventing our theatrical communities. So check us out next week. We'll be back here. Thank you all very much. Have a good rest of your day. Peace.